Hello and welcome to the Mixed Media Podcast for Wednesday, January 27th. I'm Chris Wagner, culture critic for the Dallas Morning News, and I'm joined in the studio by Christopher Wynn, former deputy editor for FD, the recently shuttered Style magazine of the Dallas Morning News. Hello, Chris.
Hello, Christopher. Chris Wagner.
We will have more on that development shortly. Also joining us, as always, is the great Lauren Smart, arts and culture editor for the Dallas Observer. Hello, Lauren.
Hello.
On today's show, we'll talk about Billions and the Big Short and the idea of sympathy for the hedge fund alpha male. Next, the Oscars are in full-blown crisis over diversity, prompting the Academy to rewrite its membership bylaws. Is it enough to stave off the calls for boycotts? Will host Chris Rock play it naughty or nice? Hopefully, very naughty. Finally, we review Second Thought Theater's new play, Martyr, at Dallas's Kalita Humphreys Theater, which we all went to see. What's up with FD, C-Dub?
Yeah, so we got the shocking and sad news about 2 weeks ago that the Dallas Morning News is shuttering FD.
Breaks my heart. I love that magazine.
Thank you. It was a sad day in Dallas. For those of you who don't know, it is a 38-year-old brand. It actually launched in June of 1978. It was the first newspaper, you know, the Morning News at the time was the first newspaper in the country to launch a freestanding weekly fashion section.
Oh, wow. I did not know that.
Yeah. So it has a long heritage, long tradition. I think one of their early covers were transparent jeans, like see-through vinyl jeans.
Was there a movie about that? So Fine? There was. with Ryan O'Neal. I'm sorry.
Oh, gosh.
My movie lizard brain is taking over.
You know, so it was back in the heydays. They went to fashion weeks and traveled. It was a great, very lively section. You know, at one point, I remember there was a story about touring Bloomingdale's with Andy Warhol. So it grew and grew. By 2000, Fashion Dallas, at the time, they had that sort of fun 70s thing of the fashion exclamation mark Dallas, and it got shortened to FD, is kind of how it became known. And it continued to grow and do well. Tracy Hayes, who had been a fashion reporter, became the editor. And in September of 2004, the first issue of FD Lux, at the time, was launched. And it was actually not a play on Deluxe, as a lot of people thought.
Yeah.
Purely just FD Lux.
And the last issue is next month?
Yes, the last issue comes out next month. The February issue will be the final issue. Rob Brinkley took over about 4 years ago and, you know, has done a terrific job and has really, you know, as a magazine, it became much more Vanity Fair, much more diving into culture and art and stories and profiles. And, we wrote about everything from scandals and murders to high fashion and art and everything in between. So it's, you know, a huge loss for the city. We've had a lot of, outcry from creative types and contributors, and so it will be missed, and I will miss it for sure.
But you're not going anywhere.
I'm not. I'm still on staff as an editor and writer at the Dallas Morning News, and I'll talk more soon about my role and my new role. But for now, I'm just, like everyone else, kind of mourning the loss of FD. So,
rest in peace. Pour out a little bit of the drink on the ground.
Exactly.
For the FD OGs. You guys ready to get started?
Let's do it.
Big
do
Short, it. The book. Hello and welcome to the Mixed Media Podcast for Wednesday, January 27th. I'm Chris Wagner, culture critic for the Dallas Morning News, and I'm joined in the studio by Christopher Wynn, former deputy editor for FD, the recently shuttered Style magazine of the Dallas Morning News. Hello, Chris.
Hello, Christopher. Chris Wagner.
We will have more on that development shortly. Also joining us, as always, is the great Lauren Smart, arts and culture editor for the Dallas Observer. Hello, Lauren.
Hello.
On today's show, we'll talk about Billions and the Big Short and the idea of sympathy for the hedge fund alpha male. Next, the Oscars are in full-blown crisis over diversity, prompting the Academy to rewrite its membership bylaws. Is it enough to stave off the calls for boycotts? Will host Chris Rock play it naughty or nice? Hopefully, very naughty. Finally, we review Second Thought Theater's new play, Martyr, at Dallas's Kalita Humphreys Theater, which we all went to see. What's up with FD, C-Dub?
Yeah, so we got the shocking and sad news about 2 weeks ago that the Dallas Morning News is shuttering FD.
Breaks my heart. I love that magazine.
Thank you. It was a sad day in Dallas. For those of you who don't know, it is a 38-year-old brand. It actually launched in June of 1978. It was the first newspaper, you know, the Morning News at the time was the first newspaper in the country to launch a freestanding weekly fashion section.
Oh, wow. I did not know that.
Yeah. So it has a long heritage, long tradition. I think one of their early covers were transparent jeans, like see-through vinyl jeans.
Was there a movie about that? So Fine? There was with Ryan O'Neal. I'm sorry.
Oh, gosh.
My movie lizard brain is taking over.
You know, so it was back in the heydays. They went to fashion weeks and traveled. It was a great, very lively section. You know, at one point, I remember there was a story about touring Bloomingdale's with Andy Warhol. So it grew and grew. By 2000, Fashion Dallas, at the time, they had that sort of fun 70s thing of the fashion exclamation mark Dallas, and it got shortened to FD, is kind of how it became known. And it continued to grow and do well. Tracy Hayes, who had been a fashion reporter, became the editor. And in September of 2004, the first issue of FD Lux, at the time, was launched. And it was actually not a play on Deluxe, as a lot of people thought.
Yeah.
Purely just FD Lux.
And the last issue is next month?
Yes, the last issue comes out next month. The February issue will be the final issue. Rob Brinkley took over about 4 years ago and, you know, has done a terrific job and has really, you know, as a magazine, it became much more Vanity Fair, much more diving into culture and art and stories and profiles. And, we wrote about everything from scandals and murders to high fashion and art and everything in between. So it's, you know, a huge loss for the city. We've had a lot of, outcry from creative types and contributors, and so it will be missed, and I will miss it for sure.
But you're not going anywhere.
I'm not. I'm still on staff as an editor and writer at the Dallas Morning News, and I'll talk more soon about my role and my new role. But for now, I'm just, like everyone else, kind of mourning the loss of FD. So,
rest in peace. Pour out a little bit of the drink on the ground.
Exactly.
For the FD OGs. You guys ready to get started?
Let's do it.
Let's do it.
I'm so ugly. That's okay, 'cause so are you. We broke our mirrors. Sunday morning is every day.
That is Dallas's own Polyphonic Spree covering Nirvana. That song is featured in the new film, The Big Short. Hedge fund alpha males.
That was
males.
A fun moment. When that
was.
Up.
Yeah. That was probably a lot of fun moments in that film.
Yeah.
So we're talking about hedge fund alpha males, or as I like to say, sympathy for the hedge fund devil. That's what we've been seeing in both The Big Short, the Oscar-nominated movie based on Mark Lewis's nonfiction book, and now in Billions, the new Showtime series about a battle of wills between a cocky hedger and a U.S. attorney. It seems a frequently reviled figure has joined the ranks of pop culture heroes and anti-heroes. What do we
anti-heroes.
Make of all this, fellow hosts?
That was the one thing in The Big Short that I... that you ride along with them as you're sort of, they don't present them as particularly heroic, but they're definitely the protagonists.
They're
of
the
that film.
They're the eccentric geniuses.
Yeah.
Christian Bell
film.
With no shoes on,
yeah.
And his glass eye.
And they're fighting the big banks.
Metal.
They're definitely, they are set up as someone who's sounding an alarm, but they're also set up as the people who are going to profit from
it. Yeah, and it plays with that tension. The main hedge fund guys, played by Christian Bale, Steve Carell, among others, that addresses the idea that, yes, they are going to profit off of shorting the housing market. And this, of course, was right before the housing market and subsequently the world economy collapsed. But they're presented as sort of the guys who have the big vision to see what's going on before it happens. So in that sense, I think they are sort of the heroes of the film.
Right. We have a trailer that kind of sets the film up. Maybe we should hear that now, and then we'll come back and talk some more about it.
The whole housing market is propped up on these bad loans. They will fail.
The housing market is rock solid.
It's a time bomb.
So Mike Burry, who gets his hair cut at Supercuts and doesn't wear shoes, knows more than Alan Greenspan.
Dr. Mike Burry, yes, he does.
You know what? I'm pissed off. American people are getting screwed by the big banks.
And I am getting madder and madder.
It's unbelievable.
Then this guy walks into my office.
You can almost hear in that trailer the frenetic camera work and pacing that's happening. Did you have that moment when it opens and the camera work is sort of like The Office and there happens to be Steve Carell there and the camera sort of zooming in and panning and then following someone, you know, doing something on their desk? And it was the pacing of it was crazy, but I loved it and I thought it really fed the immediacy of the scenes. I thought it was cool.
It is hyperkinetic, and it really has fun with how confusing some of this stuff is. Mm-hmm. It's almost winking at you and saying there's no way you're going to get all of this, but let's roll with it anyway.
And it was also the most educational piece of anything that I've seen explain what actually happened. I mean, you can read on endlessly about what happened in the housing crisis. And I actually understand it more now having seen a film that was wildly entertaining and funny. And I feel like I also left smarter.
It helps when you have those celebrity smart. Cameos to explain things. Like spoiler, taking a moment to have Anthony Bourdain illustrate a financial equation to you by, you know, chopping up old fish and reusing it in a new stew to serve to the audience. You know, Selena Gomez playing blackjack to help explain, you know, another trade arrangement.
A synthetic CDO, I believe.
Were you able to follow all of that? I'm curious. Did you guys follow all of the financial?
I have like the opposite of a financial mind. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
No, but I still enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed trying to figure out what they were talking about. I mean, I do not read the business section very much, except the Dallas Morning News business section.
Of course.
I am not a Wall Street Journal subscriber. But I think like Lauren was saying, this movie made all of these kind of esoteric ideas kind of accessible and, just as important, very entertaining.
Yeah, and I think that that's sort of why the film, I think the film itself is sort of heroic. I don't know that I think that the people it's presenting are, because it is basically saying, you got taken advantage of because you didn't know what was happening, America, and let's try to explain it to you in a way that is accessible and that allows you to see just how much you were swindled. And do it in language that actually makes sense. And I think Ryan Gosling's character at one point says, you got taken advantage of because they didn't want you to understand what was happening. That's why they use all these words, which I thought was, and right. I loved the way he came out and said, like, this actually happened. This was fiction.
So we have the eccentric the eccentric geniuses of The Big Short. And then we have Billions, which just started on Showtime, in which Damian Lewis, best known from Homeland, plays a big hedge fund guy who is a lot of swagger, a lot of cockiness. He makes a point of saying that, you know, while all of these other people in the business have their Ivy League degrees, he went to Hofstra, grew up working class, and ended up being a master of the universe. He seems to fit the anti-hero mold a little bit better, the kinds of characters that have been so popular on cable these last 10 years or so, from Tony Soprano to Don Draper.
And the American dream too, right? Fulfilled in a way that maybe isn't so heroic.
Yeah, and I think say the same thing about Tony and Don.
Yeah.
Same time. I will say right up front, I'm into this show. It's like a big juicy burger for me. Sometimes you want steak. Sometimes you want a big juicy burger. I'm finding this wildly entertaining thus far, and I am forgiving it its excesses and its broadness.
Do you think that's because of the character or because of the scenario?
I think it's the quality of the acting.
Okay.
Damian Lewis, in particular, as the hedge fund man, Axelrod, and Paul Giamatti,
who can do no wrong,
the
US, once again.
As the U.S. attorney with some very strange sexual fetishes.
Yes, yeah, quite the opening scene on this this particular show.
Yes.
Why do you think that we're at this point in time allowing these people who I think we as a general, I mean, especially as like the economy is stratified, America is stratified, why are these people playing with our imaginations this way?
You mean the makers of these entertainments?
Yeah, and why are the characters that they're creating for us tapping into something? I mean, why are we interested in this?
I mean, we're always interested in rich people. There's just something fascinating, because most of us are not and never will be rich people. So there's some kind of allure there. We love hating them and yet we want money at the same time.
Is it just that we're recovered enough from the crisis to now have some perspective on it, to look back on it?
There's some of that as well. I mean, the Big Short, the book, Michael Lewis's book, came out several years ago, 2011, I believe, shortly after the collapse, 3 years. And now we have Billions coming along. So yeah, there's always that sense of, okay, it's too soon, maybe now it's not too soon anymore.
I thought, you know, Billions I struggle with a little bit. It felt a little bit more like an ABC weeknight show to me versus a cable program. It seemed a little moralizing at points or something. There was that moment where the family is gathered around in their fabulous mansion in East Hampton, and a dog is urinating in the living room.
It's marking its territory.
on the expensive carpet and furniture.
It is literally being the alpha dog.
And so the father is using that as to explain to his son the importance of marking your territory, like you say, and it becomes this lesson. And then meanwhile, everyone just goes on and continues eating dinner. Like no one even bothers to get up. And
that's how they roll. I mean, that's their.
They'll just buy new furniture and start
buy
over.
A new one
but
later.
The thing I loved about the dog metaphor is when it gets fixed. That actually gets snipped, and he looks at Axelrod. Damian Lewis looks at it, and it's like, "I'm not going to let that happen to me." Figuratively, of course.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that actually worked really well.
I love the Paul Giamatti's wife, who plays a high-powered sort of a corporate therapist slash performance coach. I think, and I can't remember the actress's
name with a conflict of interest.
Exactly.
As well, she is and we find this out. You know, pretty straight up from the beginning. She works for the guy that Giamatti, her husband, is going after.
Mm-hmm.
So that's I like the way it's handling that storyline as well. It's Maggie Siff.
Yes.
Is the actress who was also in Mad Men. She played Rachel Menken, the department store owner in the first season of Mad Men.
Mm-hmm. I thought that was interesting, and just it's such an insight into that world and the machismo of that world and what it takes to win. At any cost. And it's an interesting comparison to make when I think about this and also The Big Short. Why do you think we're so obsessed with the hedge fund alpha male, Chris?
Yes, this is the burning question, Chris. I hope you have an answer.
You know, it's the why. I've found that in writing like trend stories and, you know, this is going on right now stories, there's often not really a why. I think people do mental gymnastics to come up with their own why. So we just, you know, we did a little bit of that. We said, you know, perspective. We want to be these guys. We have very mixed feelings about it all. Why is it happening right now? I could make something up, but I don't want to do that to you guys.
Going back to The Big Short for a minute, that was an interesting moment when two of the guys were celebrating because they've just made thousands and thousands of dollars, and Brad Pitt has that dramatic moment of, don't celebrate. These are people's homes, their lives. Somebody just lost their job.
Yep.
They just lost their house.
Yeah, he sees the big picture.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't just see that, yes, the shorters will make cash. He sees that everything's going to basically go down the drain. Brad Pitt, also very good. Bearded Brad Pitt playing a sort of secluded survivalist former banker who helps out two younger hedge fund guys.
I think in a weird way, too, it was kind of nice to see that not everybody lost from this. I mean, like in a sick, perverted way, it was like, well, at least somebody made money and at least we like them. According to the movie, these are people that are pretty pleasant. So someone was going to profit off of it. Because I think that like one of the misconceptions for a lot of people, for me, was that the money just disappeared. That all that money that the banks had taken from people and that it just disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
Someone has that money.
Which kind of happened.
Yeah.
Right.
But so surely someone somewhere, right? But I don't know. I liked The Big Short. I was shocked by how much
I liked it too. And the way I thought about it in its most simplest terms is the banks were bundling crap.
Yeah.
To sell.
And then crap within crap.
Within crap within crap. And at the end, it all exploded and they said, oh, that's too bad. World economy.
Which is such a funny point to make at the end. So, you know, so of course, you assume everyone goes to jail and laws were changed. And it's like, no, just the opposite.
Not so much.
Which kind of makes me think about going back to Making a Murderer. It's like you see it and you feel the outrage and the indignation. It's like, what do you do with that now?
What do you do with it? Yeah. Right.
So The Big Short is being considered. I've seen a couple. I don't think it's going to win Best Picture, but it's been mentioned as a possible dark horse. It is a nominee for Best Picture. Christian Bale was nominated for Supporting Actor. Adam McKay, the director, former head writer for Saturday Night Live, actually.
From the filmmaker who brought you Anchorman.
Yeah, well, yeah. Anchorman's a pretty damn funny movie.
And Spoils of Babylon. Actually.
The funny thing about movies, and we're going to move on in a sec, the funny thing about movies like Anchorman and Talladega Nights, there's a lot going on underneath the goofiness sometimes in those films. Anchorman is actually, for a broad comedy, a pretty incisive piece of media criticism as well. So I don't think it's quite, people are making
it's power.
People are making a big deal out of the disparity between this movie and previous McKay films. And I can see that, but at the same time, I think it's selling some of his previous films a little bit short. Well, let's use that Oscar segue to move into our next segment, which we will present right after
Oscars.
This.
Oscars.
I'm not sad, and just maybe I'm to blame for all I've heard.
We going Hollywood.
Just me and my team.
We going Hollywood.
Fresh up on the scene.
We going Hollywood.
All right, welcome to the 77th and last Academy Awards. It's a great night tonight. We have like 4 black nominees tonight. So, Craig, it's kind of like the Deaf Oscar Jam tonight. Now, remember when you were a kid and every movie was incredible? Every movie was magic? Oh, they were all great. Then you grow up and you watch some of those same movies and you're like, Rocky V sucks.
But Creed is really good. That is Chris Rock, of course, hosting the Oscars back in 2005. He is also hosting them this year, 2016. And that should make for some interesting viewing. The nominations were announced earlier this month, and they were, once again, as the hashtag says, so white. 20 actors nominated, none of them people of color. Nothing really new there. Lack of diversity has long plagued the Academy Awards. What's different this time is the fallout, multi-part fallout. First, we have Spike Lee and Jada Pinkett Smith calling for an Oscar boycott, Academy leadership calling for and then enacting new membership restrictions and requirements aimed at raising the percentage of minority and women voters. And then a lot of these voters, most of whom I've never heard of, and I'm a movie critic, have voiced their displeasure. What does it all mean?
My God. You know, it's interesting that that this has come back full circle after, what was the year that Oscars, quote-unquote, went black?
That was the
Halle Berry
Denzel, one. Halle yeah. Berry, Sidney Poitier honorary Oscar year. I don't remember the year, though.
It's funny. You would think that would kind of usher in a new age of diversity with the Academy Awards. But it hasn't. But then some people have argued, is there really...
I think it was 2002. Sorry.
2002. Why do you think things have not changed, Chris, since that glorious moment of Halle Berry and Denzel Washington?
I would say that glorious moment was kind of a blip and was sort of an anomaly. And I mean, this has been a problem for many years, as I said, with the Oscars. So you have a step forward and then you have several steps back. I think the bigger problem than... I think the Oscar representation is a problem. I think the bigger problem is that we end up having to hope that a Creed or a Straight Outta Compton or Beasts of No Nation gets nominations. We're leaning on a very small sample size. The people who make the decisions to greenlight movies, the people who are in positions of power are generally not going to push, let's say, minority stories, minority perspectives front and center. I mean, the Academy, some people might not like hearing this, but the people who vote on these awards are largely old, white, and male. And at the end of the day, it's not real complicated math to me.
It's a shame too that it's like what we were saying in the last segment. You only know the surface level thing. Like, we only know the output of these awards. We only know what the nominations are. We don't know how far back we'd have to trace the problem. Is it there aren't enough scripts being written? Are they not getting optioned?
Well, we can probably trace it back to Birth of a Nation, well, yeah. Which was like, you know, the first seriously, I mean, it's like the landmark narrative American film, yeah. And it's about how great the KKK is.
Right.
You can jump up to Gone with the Wind if you want.
Which a black woman did win an Academy Award.
Ironically enough, yeah. Yes. Mm-hmm. So it goes throughout history. We can trace it back to the beginning of the medium.
It's interesting too. Obviously, the internet's reacting in such a way, and someone supercut every winner, every black winner of the Academy Awards and their speeches, and every single time from the woman who plays Mammy in Gone with the Wind,
Hattie McDaniel,
from her until Morgan Freeman, until 5 years ago, Octavia Spencer, every single one says, oh, this is huge. Now
everything will change.
Now everything will change. Now women, young women across the country will know they can do this. And then nothing changes.
So there's one thing I am excited about here. I think this is going to be Chris Rock's moment. I mean, yeah. I think he's had many
all
of them.
All eyes are on him.
So
sure.
far, but I think this is an occasion that he can rise to, and I think he will. He's got a tricky job here. I mean, he's has to play the game. Mm-hmm. He's there with all the power brokers. He's hosting their shindig. But you know he's got plenty of thoughts on this, and you got to hope that he's not going to hold back too much.
Well, the good news for him is at this point, it's been everywhere. He won't be the first. He won't be some kind of like harbinger of the story. It's already been told, and so he just can play with it. What if the Academy's changed their bylaws? What has changed?
They are sort of in effect. They are phasing out older and less active members of the Academy, and trying to bring in more younger and female and minority members into the Academy. They want to boost that membership up a great deal. And you see a lot of the old school Academy voters who might get pushed out complaining about it. But, I mean, I'm looking at some of these stories, and this guy's like, I was the Oscar nominee for Best Live Action Short in 1969, and I'm outraged by these changes. Dude, no one really cares.
Right.
So, not to be too harsh,
yeah.
But the people who are being, a lot of the people who I think will be most affected by this in the Academy are not exactly cutting edge and on the tip of anybody's tongue.
All the momentum around boycotting, do you think that will happen? Would it matter if it happened? Would you, as a viewer, would it just be a blip, you know, on the map?
I think it already matters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, I think just the threat of it was what pushed the Academy to make some of these changes.
To respond.
So in a sense, it's already happened. Mm-hmm. It's certainly happened in the public conversation.
It's already succeeded in a way. Yeah.
We're talking about it right now, and right. The Oscars aren't even this month.
Mm-hmm.
Will you know, some people have said they won't show up. Will Smith, Jada Pinkett Smith, Spike Lee, and yeah, there will be others as well. I don't think every African-American filmmaker or actor or industry member is going to skip the Oscars. But yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing how much it is felt in action when the day comes.
Yeah, it's interesting to see this happen with I want to say it was the Penn Awards. A bunch of women refused to go for similar discrimination mm-hmm. reasons. And it's interesting to me to see this happening so much. I wonder if it will change the narrative and how seriously we take these awards.
I don't take them very seriously as it is.
Right. And my hope would be that that will at least in some ways diminish how much emphasis we put on this, because the whole entertainment complex is built around Oscar season right now, and it's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, it's really ridiculous. You get all the prestigious movies at the end of the year because nobody can remember what came out in April.
Which is its own, that's absurd.
Yeah, I mean, right. This is, you know.
Make a list, people.
I look forward to January and February every year because, hey, I can write other stories. I don't have to write about the movies because most of them are going to suck anyway.
Right.
Except the ones that are trickling in from the end of the previous year.
The prestige, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's you know, we can talk about the ailments of Hollywood for eons and eons.
Well, what it really means this year is it will be, I would think, one of their most watched telecasts.
Or least watched.
Yeah. Well, that's true. Maybe the boycott extends to
viewers. Yeah, I'm not going to watch it.
I think, you know, yeah. not to use the hoary cliche, but I do think this is a tipping point mm-hmm. of sorts.
Yeah.
I think this will be seen as a before and after kind of year, and I think that's good.
Mm-hmm.
If they can make the Oscars more interesting, if they can make them younger if they can make them more relevant, if they get more people watching, and they obviously want that, then I think we're going to remember this.
Well, we'll see when it happens. We'll be back here to talk about it.
We shall see. Chris Rock will host the Oscars February 27th on ABC. And we'll be right back.
We going Hollywood.
Just me and my team.
We going Hollywood.
Fresh up on the scene.
We going Hollywood.
Second Thought Theater, a small company that performs in Turtle Creek, kicks off its 2016 season with Martyr, a play about a teenager who wreaks havoc on everyone around him when he finds himself drawn to fundamentalist Christianity. It's a work in translation by German playwright Marius von Mayenberg that has been directed at Second Thought Theater by SMU professor Blake Hackler. Lawrence Smart, you are the one that... I'm not going to say forced us to go to this because I kind of liked it. You want to set it up for us?
Yeah, sure. So Benjamin, who's played here by a young actor named Garrett Storms, is a teenager, and he gets to a point where, I mean, they basically set it up as if he's confused about a lot of things and is therefore drawn to this very strict orthodoxy that he finds in primarily Old Testament, the Old Testament of the Bible. And so he just starts, like, he basically spirals downward into this world that's very strict, very rigid, very black and white, that makes sense to him. And just, like, one by one, he enforces it on everyone around him. It starts with him not wanting to go to swim class because the girls wear bikinis, and that's...
Which is the only reason I went to swim class.
And that's it gives him confused ideas, and it's improper, and before long, he's plotting to commit effectively acts of terrorism on everyone around him. So it's really dark.
I have mixed feelings about the play itself. I thought some of it overreached and some of it kind of just didn't know exactly what it was doing. But it definitely shook me. It made me, as I was sitting there, I felt shook. And I felt some of the existential... I don't know, maybe not dread, but questioning that I think they are trying to provoke.
Yeah.
That the playwright, Marius von Mayenberg, is trying to provoke here. So, I mean, to me, that's kind of the acid test. Does this alter me a little bit? Does it shake me up? And yeah, the answer is absolutely.
Yeah, it's very un-American, the play is. It's not...
It's very German.
It's very German, very Brecht.
It was a translated play.
Yeah.
I don't know if
Yeah, so it was translated from German, and it has a lot of Brechtian tendencies. There aren't very many... And I think there aren't very many human-like people in the play. And if there are in the text, Blake Hackler has totally taken them out in this production.
I felt like it was, I don't know if you've seen a lot of Michael Haneke films. He's a very severe German filmmaker.
Okay.
It kind of felt like I was watching a very stripped down Michael Haneke film.
Yeah, it's like instead of someone getting hit by a train in the last scene, and I won't spoil it, but something very dramatic happens that is violent in its own nature. And did you like it, Christopher?
Well, I have a confession to make. I didn't get to see all of it.
Oh, no.
I had a moment. I was actually watching the play from the sound booth.
Oh, I've done that before.
Yeah, and it worked up to a point, and then I finally realized I could not hear or get was happening enough, and I wanted to give it a fair treatment, so I didn't get to see all of it. I did get to see the opening. My companion, though, the word we were discussing on the way out was overwrought.
Yes.
It felt very...
Yeah, I felt like it was, while I think it's fascinating and interesting and absolutely worth seeing, I thought this production was a little conflicted in terms of how I think it was trying to read something into the play that I'm not sure is there. And this production felt very anti-religious to me.
What did you think it was interpolating? What did you think wasn't there originally?
Well, I think that the character, particularly the character of Father Minrath, who is his religious studies teacher, is there as this juxtaposition to his version of religion. And Father Minrath, while he speaks in cliches and is not particularly very for what's the word, pious. He's sort of this counterpoint of like, well, no, religion can be something easy and accepting, and it doesn't have to be so stern and cold like you're making
it.
He's
sort of the soft, fuzzy Christianity representative.
Absolutely. And that's even what Benjamin accuses of him. But what they've chosen to do with this character that is not in the script is to do these sort of like, all these characters have their own little trick. And his thing is that he paces the stage, doesn't look at people when he's talking to them, and totally strips the humanity from that character. So it can't be a counterpoint to Benjamin at all. And I think religion then comes off as this caricature instead of, it feels disrespectful. And I felt like because of that, you disrespect a lot of it's not open-minded at all. It's decided what it is, particularly in the case of religion, which I felt was unnecessary.
I really liked the sparseness of the production. There's really nothing being used here except a table, a cross,
yep,
at some point, few props.
Yeah,
but it's a real, real spare kind of set that puts a lot of weight on the actors.
Yeah.
I thought the lead, Garrett Storms, is that his name? I thought he was fantastic.
He was amazing.
He has to carry long parts of that play in a very high pitch.
Yeah, I enjoyed all of the actors. I thought that all the actors really were doing something interesting on stage. Very different things, but Ruben Carzana, who's the young, he played George, the young crippled boy.
I thought he was really good.
He did his little sad clown. Basically, you enjoy his performance because he's performing as the sad clown of the play. And I thought he was really great. I thought Allison Pistorius as Erica Roth, the woman who gets, she's actually the one who tries to face him head on by studying the Bible and taking a lot, they both are taking things out of context, but she's taking the Jesus Bible and its messages of love and acceptance and trying to combat his version of it. And she goes crazy. She like finds herself going mad with her mission to take him down. She was great.
What can you tell us, Lauren, about Second Thought? What's their mission? What kind of stuff are they? I've seen one other play there. And I don't remember what it was, but I liked it.
Yeah, no, Second Thought has got to be one of the most consistently high quality companies in the city. And they do that while also presenting new work. I mean, the only play that I can, in my memory, think that wasn't from the last 10 years was when they did Othello last year. But they did an interesting version. I mean, they weren't even doing that as straight Shakespeare.
What'd they do with Othello? I'm curious.
It was very militaristic. It was very contemporary, and it was about war and racism, and it was just very, it was very political. And I think that's one of the things that they do well, and this production does well, although I didn't necessarily agree with it, is that they're not afraid to do something challenging and interesting with this new work. They're not afraid to ask questions of it and see what happens when they do, which is really fun as an intelligent theater goer to find that in a space and to know that everything you go see is going to leave you with things to talk about.
You can see Martyr at Second Thought Theater through February 6th. Tickets are $25 or pay what you can on Monday nights. We'll be right back with some touts. Let's move on to our touts. This is the portion of our show where each of us recommends one thing we are reading, watching, clicking on, listening to, or just plain obsessed with, because we're very obsessive people here. Lauren Smart, what are you obsessing about?
There is a woman who's like been dubbed the queen of folk music or something along those lines. And her name is Anais Mitchell, and she has several albums. They're all great. But I revisited, for some reason the other day, an album called Hadestown, which is this sort of like folk rock opera. And she's recruited people like Justin Vernon from Bon Iver and a number of other pretty famous folk musicians, and basically taken all of these Greek myths and turned them into these folk songs. And it's surprisingly good. That kind of sounds dull in its own way, but it's surprisingly good. And as I was going down this rabbit hole, I learned that she has a concert at the Granada in March.
There you go.
Mitchell, check her out.
You have piqued my interest.
Worth a listen.
We should have had a sound clip from her today. Maybe we could get one in post.
If we had our act together. If we were, none of them. Christopher Wynn.
So I'd heard about a podcast recently that intrigued me from Wyoming Public Radio, and it's a show called Human Nature. I was intrigued by it because I'd heard that the host, Caroline Ballard, purposely does not prep for interviewing the guest on the show. And I was curious.
That sounds irresponsible.
Yeah, it sounds.
Sounds like Terry Gross.
Yeah. Well,
don't beat up on Terry.
So it sounded intriguing. So I listened to it, and I actually really loved the show. The show is about humans and their intersections with nature, which sounds just kind of crazy. But like the first episode is about a guy who takes photographs of tourists who are river rafting, and his challenge was how to get the photograph across the river and get it back to town to get processed so that when they're done with their trip, they can buy their photo. This was, you know, obviously years back. And he goes through all these elaborate things and finally ends up getting a carrier pigeon system where he actually has pigeons that would carry the film, you know, back to the station to be developed. And everything went well until the city then had a hawk release program hawks began killing the pigeons. It was just this bizarre story and it completely had me pulled in.
It's all fun and games till they unleash the hawk.
I know. So each one is just kind of a nature moment, and it was strangely kind of relaxing and calming and fun. So anyway, it's called Human Nature. It's a good de-stressor. Check it out.
Is it syndicated yet? Do we have it on?
It's on iTunes. Yeah, it's on iTunes. You can subscribe, and, you know, just like a regular podcast.
But subscribe to our podcast first.
Yeah, exactly.
While you're searching for ours. Right. Next stop.
Exactly.
You may also like my rave, my tout, my obsession. It's fitting. It's about Hitchcock, very obsessive kind of guy.
Yes.
One of my favorite films from last year was a documentary called Hitchcock Truffaut. It's about a very famous interview session between the French New Wave filmmaker François Truffaut and Alfred Hitchcock, and it yielded a wonderful book of both words and pictures called Hitchcock Truffaut. And now there is a documentary. It's weird. It's a film about a book about films. It is really one of the best close readings of Hitchcock's work that I have ever encountered. It's a first-rate documentary about film, which is kind of its own little genre. It uses the perfect clips to make its points, and it's coming to Dallas. I'm kind of thrilled. I'm surprised that one of the bigger art houses didn't pick it up. So kudos to the Great Texas Theater for showing Hitchcock Truffaut. It plays Thursday through Sunday, and then I believe pops up again next week. You can check out their calendar at TexasTheater.com. So,
and you have a great story about it that you can read in DallasNews.com.
DallasNews.com. What are we? I'm sorry. What are we talking?
Yeah.
Oh, that's right. My story. Thank you, Chris. My brain is sizzled.
Yes.
I do have a column at GuideLive. GuideLive.com or DallasNews.com.
Which I recommend because I read it this morning.
Yeah, you liked my Facebook post.
I did.
I appreciate that. Yeah. I interviewed the director, Kent Jones, who is also the director of the New York Film Festival and a fine writer on film and the arts in his own right. So yes, please read my column. Thank you, Chris, for reminding me that I wrote it. It's
helping you plug yourself.
It will change. Yeah. It will change your life. You'll find links to some of the things we've talked about today on our show page at guylive.com/podcasts. Drop us an email at mixedmedia@dallasnews.com or send us a tweet at mixedmediapod. Please subscribe to our show on iTunes and leave us a review as long as it's a good one. Just search for our name. Mixed Media is engineered by Brian Elledge and produced by Christopher Wynn and Chris Wagner. We'll be back in 2 weeks with a new episode. Until then, for Christopher Wynn and Lauren Smart, I'm Chris Wagner. We thank you for joining us.